Initially, I think when we talked about it, we were looking at doing something around the Caravaggio itself, but the Caravaggio was already earmarked for another exhibition, the Lines of Vision exhibition, which John Banville wrote about the taking of Christ. So this exhibition then came about, and it's really an appropriate theme for the Jesuits, because this is really focusing on the art of the Counter-Reformation. So we're dealing with 17th century art. And a lot of the subject matter and the way that art is produced in the 17th century really has its origins in events that happened in the 16th century, in particular the Protestant Reformation and then the Catholic Counter-Reformation. And when Martin Luther had, you know, pinned up his theses to the Wittenberg Church, he really didn't envisage that he was going to cause a schism in the church, but ultimately that is what he did. And one of the main areas that Protestants objected to was the veneration of saints, the worship of saints, because they felt that they were idolatrous, they felt that it was superstitious, and that really there was no place for this in Christian practice. Whereas Catholics took a different attitude to it, and they felt that the veneration of saints was something that was very important for a number of reasons, one of them being a didactic aid, because most people at that time couldn't read, and so visual imagery was really the way that people were able to have the Bible or narratives or figures from the Bible or the Gospels explained to them. So Catholics really felt that they weren't willing to give up this very valuable tool in terms of persuading people and giving people knowledge about their faith. And then there was two major prongs to the Catholic campaign, if you like. One of that was the Council of Trent, which ran from 1545 to 1563. And at the very last session in 1563, a decree on art was passed. And in this decree, it was decided that Catholics would continue to venerate and worship saints, they would continue to have them in their churches and in their homes, but that the way that perhaps art had been produced was to go in a slightly different direction. And this was really relating back to Mannerist art, which is a style of art that comes after the High Renaissance and before the Baroque. And this style can be quite elitist in terms of the content, the pictorial content, and also can be a little bit difficult for people to interpret in terms of, because what had happened was the High Renaissance artists reached the ability to be able to produce the figure, the perfect figure. So where do you go after you've done that? So it's a little bit like modern day Picasso. Picasso could sketch perfectly realistically if he wanted to, but what he actually did was something very different, something very creative. And the Italians have a word for this, it's invenzione. And what they wanted to do was to expand their creativity, and they did this by distorting figures and by including these difficult to read iconography in their paintings. But you can see how this would be a problem for people understanding religious narratives. So the advice to artists coming out of the Council of Trent was to not have any extraneous details in your paintings. So someone like Caravaggio, you can see why his style would have been very appropriate to what the Catholic hierarchy wanted. The basic figures, close up to the picture plane, so therefore close to us, no kind of mythological elements to it or elements that are difficult to read. So in that regard, that was one of the reasons why his style became so popular and so influential. The other thing then that happened was that the Jesuit order was founded. And the Jesuit order was very much about supporting the Catholic papacy, because of course they swear that extra vow of loyalty to the Pope. And Ignatius Loyola had recognized that there was a need to counteract the Protestant thinking. But unlike back in the days of the Crusades, when it was, you know, all about your horse and your charger and your armor, now it was a different kind of battle. It was an intellectual battle. And so Ignatius Loyola recognized this. And this is part of the reason that Jesuits, from the very beginning, that he wanted them to have a very high level of education. And this was really one of the ways that Jesuits became educationalists, because the aristocrats recognized that they were very educated and wanted them to teach their sons, and so it expanded from there. But one of the most important texts of the Counter-Reformation was Ignatius Loyola's Spiritual Exercises. And it was very popular, really very popular in the 17th century, and not something that was just for Jesuits, but also for lay people. And because Ignatius Loyola encouraged this composition of place, this using your imagination to create an image, a pictorial mental image in your mind of what you're meditating on, you can see how that would influence
artists. But done very well.
Yeah. And so he was advising people to use their five senses. So if, say, for example, somebody was meditating on hell, well, they would imagine that they could hear the screams of people being tortured, they could feel the heat of the flames and smell the sulfur. So you can see how this is really firing the imagination. But also, he was about using the whole person to inform a better, a closer union with God. Protestants felt that it was more about reasoning. It was more of a rational faith. It was more about reading the text, thinking, and not, and really separating from the body. Whereas for Catholics, they were still really felt that the body and mind were not something that was separate, but that you use the whole lot to create this greater sense of union. And this is where mysticism was something as well that maintained in the Catholic religion, whereas Protestants had really no time for that. And even within the Catholic faith, there were a lot of people who had, you know, they were a little bit not terribly sure about mysticism and where that was leading. And again, this idea of it being perhaps something superstitious or, you know,
feminine. A lot of the women writers were mystics.
Yes, that's true. And we have a beautiful painting of St. Teresa here in the exhibition. And it was great, actually, that the National Gallery had a painting of her. And in this painting, we see her. She's dressed from head to toe, full length, in her nun's habit and the Carmelite. Of course, she established the Discalced Carmelites. And we see her. She's pointing to her heart with her hand. And this may be a reference to one of the visions that she had, where an angel came and repeatedly pierced her through the heart with a golden arrow. And she's also writing. She has a book on a desk and she's writing. And this relates to her prolific writing because she suffered from a prolonged illness and she channeled the pain of that illness into meditation. We don't know what exactly she had, but she certainly used the meditation as a means of channeling that pain. And again, this is about the body, using the body and what the body is experiencing to channel that into the mind. And Ignatius Loyola, of course, also had visions. So the Jesuits were very supportive of Teresa, as was the King of Spain at the time as well. And in turn, the Jesuits supported the cult of Joseph, as did Teresa. And they were canonized on the same day in 1622 in Rome.
So they took to it, the Jesuits took to this artistic endeavor with gusto. Some people would find that the Baroque period is overly ornate, mm-hmm. overly fussy, mm-hmm. and just say, oh no, it's too much for me. Now, I have to say, I don't think that's the impression one gets in this exhibition. It's not like that, really.
Yeah.
But in general, how much do you think that ornate and fussy, stylized trend, was it in any way related to the fact that it was a reaction to the stark opposite in the Protestant tradition, which is just the book, what you read in the Bible, and no images? Was it an enthusiastic response?
I would agree with you, very much so, because if you think of someone like Bernini, who, when you think of this high Baroque, very ornate, lots of stucco, everything going on, rays of light, and that is the case, because we know Bernini was actually very close to the Jesuits and that he did the spiritual exercises himself. And if we look at even things like those sunbursts of rays, you know, they're related to the idea of the Eucharist. And also this idea, if you think of Bernini's statue of St. Teresa of Avila in the Cornaro Chapel in Rome, I think the ultimate kind of in Baroque, and she's having this vision that we've talked about, it's the vision we talked about earlier, where of the arrow, the angel piercing her with the arrows, and this whole idea again of bringing in the body and the mysticism. And of course, if you're dealing with a supernatural, you've got to be explosive, you've got to be impressive. And I think for us that we live in a time where everything's about minimalism, everything's about paring it down, paring it back. And so for the modern eye, Baroque can be just too much, all this, and again, the mixing of marbles, the ceilings, the whole thing, this horror of spare space. But it is about really trying to see it and understanding it in the terms that it was seen then. And I think when I would have first started looking at Baroque, I would have thought that as well. I would have gone into some Baroque churches and went, oh God, it's just so much gold, gilt and stucco. Now I see it differently because I understand a lot more what the artist is trying to convey and to try and understand how people felt at that time and how much they wanted to convey emotion as well. And bearing in mind that, you know, now we've got television, everything snap, snap, snap. But for people in the 17th century, you walked into a church, you were expecting to be impressed. They didn't want austere and stark. They wanted to be impressed and they wanted to feel a sense of connection. And this is a way of doing that.
And this exhibition runs until the 31st of May. It's in the National Gallery of Ireland in Dublin, in Kildare Street. Wonderful, free, and well worth a visit, as is this whole gallery. It really is an amazing gallery.
Yes, and it is. It's a great opportunity to see these works. As I say, some of them haven't been out of storage for quite some time. And when the gallery fully opens up in 2016, then hopefully we'll be able to see some of them again. But again, they'll be in a completely different context. So this is really the only opportunity to see it in this kind of context.
And the wonderful books.
And the books, yeah, very much so.